Astor Economic Week in Review. My name is John Eckstein. I'm the Chief Investment Officer of Astor Investment Management. I'm joined today by my friend and colleague, Nick Porter. Nick, hello.
Hey, John.
And we are recording on Thursday, January 20th, 2022. And I think today we are going to dive into the recent inflation moves, like what we see the outlook for the next couple of months in inflation, how it's affecting the Fed. And I would like to touch on why I think January's numbers might be very scary when they start coming out in 2 weeks. So, Nick, why don't you give us your nutshell view of the economy before we jump into the details?
You know, I think broadly speaking, the U.S. economy is quite strong, right? That's not really a surprise, retail sales, consumption, et cetera, et cetera. I do think that we've begun to see a moderation in some of the data that has come out recently in things like PMIs, for example, that suggest that over the next, say, 2 quarters, the U.S. economy is going to start moving back towards trend. And so, yeah, we will see a bit of a slowdown, but it's probably healthy to the extent that we return to something approximating potential output.
Yep. I agree with that. So let's start with inflation. This came out a while ago now, like 10 days ago. So the CPI number was 7% year on year for the headline number, 5.5% year on year for core number. And that was actually amazingly, that was like right at expectations, right, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, the writing's on the wall when you sort of add up these month over month increases that we're going to end the year somewhere around 6.9 to 7%. So it seems a bit unimaginable, but that was in fact right in line with expectations.
Right. When we look at the month on month changes, though, seasonally adjusted, we do see those maybe moderating. You may have to squint a little to see it, but what do you think about the month on month change? Is that coming down? It's definitely not accelerating anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the last 2 month-on-month increases would be hot in any other context, but they are declining from their peak, you know, about 2 months ago. So that, I think, is encouraging. And also, I mean, sort of just looking back over 2021, we sort of have a full scope or full idea of what inflation has consisted of. And someone's done some interesting research around what exactly is contributing to excess inflation. And it's really no surprises, even though we've talked a lot about the shift of consumers' consumption from services to goods and the pressures that places on prices. But the story really for excess inflation has been used cars, automobiles, and energy prices.
Yep. And so like so far in January, the used car prices have not attenuated. They're increasing at a slower rate of growth, but they're still extremely high. You can look at, they actually, the people who auction used cars in bulk release a little report, the Manheim survey of the auctions, and those set a new high for January, though at a decreasing rate of growth. Energy still, you know, has been a big contributor to headline CPI, maybe a third of the overall 7 percentage points. That number, energy number, if you think about unleaded gas or something like that, doesn't look like that's coming down at all. There's a little bit of a wide spread between the retail and wholesale gas right now, but not, you know, 2 standard deviations or anything. Like it's a little bit wider than it should be, but there's not a ton of room for it to come back without wholesale gas prices decreasing. So, I mean, I think that I see, and the overall issue is the change in consumption patterns, right? It's like we're buying more stuff and doing less activities than we were 2.5 years ago. And that's not changing in January. That's not changing in March, right? It'll change as the pandemic normalizes, presumably, and some combination of the world capitalist system readjusts to whatever new future we have. But that's not going to be gone next month.
Right. And, you know, I hate sounding like a broken drum here. We've talked about this in previous podcasts, but the thing that keeps me up at night is not used car and energy prices, right? I would sort of expect those to dissipate. I hate to use the word transitory, but there it is. We would expect that consumption patterns are going to revert to historical norms, absent any evidence that they won't. And we also expect that supply chains will begin to catch up for things like cars and certainly the energy sector as well. So to the extent that those are contributing to inflation, obviously it's painful, but it doesn't worry me too much. What would is stickier things like wages. We've talked about the wage price spiral and rent and housing. And I'm curious to hear your views on where those stand today and if we see any warning signs yet.
So the real average hourly earnings is back down to trend, actually. So there are problems with all these earnings numbers, but the real wages are back to the pre-COVID trend. I don't think it's the case that individual people working at Starbucks are making twice as much in real terms as they were a couple of years ago, right? I think I think a lot of that has been eaten up. Rent, you certainly think that with house prices being higher, rent would go higher as well. Though again, you know, if you do have a shifting pattern of consumption in the medium term, it's not clear what's going to happen. Like, you could definitely have some distortions, right? If people are moving out of Brooklyn into Westchester or into Manhattan because they want to be close to people, it's going to change all the patterns of everything. So I'm not sure what's going to happen to rent, but I mean, I guess I think it's going to be higher.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I agree with those points. I guess the broad point that I want to make is that a lot of the commentary and certainly market participants and maybe to some extent the Fed have done away with this transitory narrative and fair enough, right? The inflation has proved durable and hotter for longer than we might have previously expected. But my base case scenario is still that the capitalist system works and that these things are eventually going to get shaken out and that we're not really seeing an outright secular shift in the way that inflation will be composed in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. And I think more to the point, the Fed raising rates without causing a broad economic slowdown or recession, the Fed raising rates modestly is not going to do anything to alleviate the sources of this inflation. And at some point, if they decide, gosh, we have to put the economy into recession, like that's going to be sort of unfortunate.
Agreed. Which I guess brings us to the Fed.
Yeah, so the Fed is meeting next week right now. So the official state of play when we went home in December was that the Fed was probably going to stop buying new bonds in March for QE and raise rates at some point. And I think the expectation now is that the Fed will stop buying bonds in March. 100% forecast of a 25 basis point hike in March as well. There is some people talking about a 50 basis point hike in March. You could also interpret that. So that's sort of like the base case, right? One possible surprise would be the Fed ends its QE in January and starts raising rates in January. That would be a bearish surprise that would get the market's attention. Another possible surprise in that direction would be the Fed raising 50 basis points in March. I think the base case that I described, ending QE in March, raising rates 25 basis points in March, is still the most likely. I could see them ending QE a little bit faster, like in January or February, but I don't see them raising rates in January or raising rates 50 basis points. They haven't raised rates 50 basis points in 20, 25 years, right? So,
yeah.
And even though inflation is high, I don't think that the Fed is concerned about it in that way. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. It's been interesting that the Fed has started at least talking a little bit more hawkishly. And to some extent, financial markets have done their hard work for them, right? 10-year yield, 2-year yield up quite a bit since the last meeting. I think generally the question in my mind is, how has the Fed's reaction function changed to inflation being more durable than we previously expected? And where does it sort of sit within the dual mandate framework that they've been using combined with average inflation targeting? And I think now with U3 unemployment at about 3.9%, they feel like they have a little bit more wiggle room to at least talk a little bit more hawkishly, to roll QE off quite a bit faster than they've done previously. But with all that said, I don't really see any scope for a 50 basis point increase in March. That would be quite the surprise.
Right. And so I think market consensus is for 100 basis points hike in calendar 2022. You think that's right?
That is probably the baseline scenario. I think there's probably downside and upside risks to that forecast on both sides. For example, supply chain issues work themselves out and inflation starts to moderate quite a bit quicker. On the other side, things like OER and wages pick up quite a bit and the Fed has to act a little bit faster. I think 100 is probably a good overview.
OER, you mean?
Owner equivalent rent.
Right. So that's this way house prices work their way into the CPI, right? When you're consuming housing, when you have a house, you get an asset and you're consuming shelter, and they induce the shelter price into the CPI. Yeah, I heard something. When I've heard the Fed officials actually reject this claim. I'm curious what you think about it. The Fed hikes according to plan and cuts in reaction to events. You think that's true?
I think that sounds right. I mean, the only argument would be sort of 2018, 2019. That was not really a cutting cycle that I had seen or I think that the Fed had planned. But yeah, broadly speaking, I think that's true.
I've heard central bankers say that's definitely not true, but I think it's true. Other than that, the chair is trying to get reappointed. He had some hearings for that before the Senate. And anything you see interesting that came out of that, I saw basically saying that sort of an overall bearish or overall hawkish tone, sort of signaling what we had just discussed. You see anything else interesting came out of that?
No, I mean, I think you're right. It was certainly, from my perspective, a hawkish narrative. And rather than focusing as much as they have in the past on labor market expansion, it was really quite inflation focused.
I guess the question is also, will the Fed maintain the balance sheet or allow stuff to start rolling off?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of speculation around the pace of the taper and then also the extent that they allow treasuries and agency securities to roll off the balance sheet over a cap that gets reinvested as they've done in the past. And there aren't really any details around that. I think that's going to be quite interesting to watch.
I guess I expect them to shift fairly quickly to actually reducing the balance sheet. There was a long transition period last time. I expect it to be shorter this time. I think they're going to be letting stuff roll off by the summer, late summer, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's right. And now they sort of have, you know, they have this experience in that the treasury markets, treasuries are obviously quite closely tied to bank capital ratios and money markets. And there's some turmoil, obviously, last time they did that. And now they sort of think that with the repo facilities and other tools, IOER, they have the tool set, or at least the skill set, to manage some of that.
Yeah. Okay, before we go, I want to say, I want to put a sort of a marker in the ground saying, I'm worried that the January numbers could be very difficult. I'm thinking like there could be negative payroll numbers for January. When we get retail sales numbers, they could be down. So what am I looking at? Well, one thing is the household pulse survey is basically doubled the amount of people who say they're not working this week because they have or were caring for someone with COVID. That number, that's a new survey. It's not clear how it maps onto the household survey for payrolls. There's lots of caveat. It's not clear even if you're home with COVID, whether you're counted as unemployed. But all that being said, like that number doubling is a lot, right? Or more than doubling, right? So from like 3 million people saying they were not working because of COVID or a family member having COVID to 8 million, right? That's a lot. That's got to show up somewhere. So in addition, you do see jobless claims going up for 3 weeks in a row for the first time. The dining, open table dining, and TSA clearances are both down. The Chase real card, credit card or bank card spending is down. That's like a real-time number. Confidence numbers are down in January. That's continuing a trend, but still down. I'm not seeing anybody talk about this yet, but I think we're going to soon. I think January could be difficult because of the Omicron, and hopefully by the time we realize it, things will be getting better.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like a possibility. Obviously, the claims numbers in particular, jobless claim numbers, are hard to interpret with the seasonal adjustments around the holidays. But I do think that the breadth of data sort of points in the direction of a weak payroll number.
Yeah, I'm expecting negative right now, but
we'll hold you to it.
Hold me to it. We'll see. Rob will hold me to that. Okay, I think we're going to leave it there. If you would like any more information about our take on the economy or some more charts, you can check out the Aster website, asterim.com. That's IM for investment management. You can download the Aster Research app, or you can reach out to your favorite Aster sales rep. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, John.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.